Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 26, Text Number 9. Tatra nirbina gatranam tatra nirbina gatranam chitra vajai silimukai chitra vajai silimukai viplavo Bhut Dukitanam Viplavo Bhut Dukitanam Dusasaha Karunatmanam Dusasaha Karunatmanam Tatra Nirvina Gatranam Chitra Vajai Sili Mukai Viplavo Bhutukitanam Dushasya Karunatmanam Tatra Nirvina Gatranam Chitra Vajai Sili Mukai Viplavo Bhutukitanam Dushasya Karunatmanam Tatra nirvina gatranam Chitra vajai sili mukai Viplavo buddhukitanam Dukas duksaha karunatmanam Tatra nirvina gatranam Chitra Vajai Sili Mukai Viplava Buddha Gitanam Ladies, Tatra, there, nirbina, being pierced, gatranam, whose bodies, chitravajai, with variegated flower, feathers, silimukai, by the arrows, viplava, destruction. Abhut was done. Dukitanam of the most aggrieved. Dusasha unbearable. Karuna Atmanam. For persons who are very merciful. Translation. When King Puranjan was hunting in this way, many animals within the forest lost their lives with great pain, being pierced by the sharp arrowheads. Upon seeing these devastating, ghastly activities performed by the king, all the people who were merciful by nature became very unhappy. Such merciful persons could not tolerate seeing all this killing. Please repeat. When King Puranjan was hunting in this way, many animals within the forest lost their lives with great pain, being pierced by the sharp arrowheads. Upon seeing these devastating, ghastly activities performed by the king, all the people who were merciful by nature became very unhappy. Such merciful persons could not tolerate seeing all this killing. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. When demoniac persons engage in animal killing, the demigods or the devotees of the Lord are very much afflicted by this killing. Demoniac civilizations in this modern age maintain various types of slaughterhouses all over the world. Rascal swamis and yogis encourage foolish persons to go on eating flesh and killing animals, and at the same time continue their so-called meditation and mystical practices. All these affairs are ghastly, and a compassionate person, namely a devotee of the Lord, becomes very unhappy to see such a sight. The hunting process is also carried on in a different way, as we have already explained. Hunting women, drinking different types of liquor, becoming intoxicated, killing animals, and enjoying sex all serve as the basis of modern civilization. Vaishnavas are unhappy to see such a situation in the world, and therefore they are very busy spreading this Krishna consciousness movement. The devotees are pained to see the hunting and killing of animals in the forest, the wholesale slaughter of animals in the slaughterhouses, and the exploitation of young girls in brothels that function under different names as clubs and societies. Being very much compassionate upon the killing of animals and sacrifice, the great sage Narada began his instructions to King Pratinibharhisha. In these instructions, Narada Muni explained that devotees like him are very much afflicted by all the killing that goes on in human society. Not only are saintly persons afflicted by this killing, but even God himself is afflicted and therefore comes down in the incarnation of Lord Buddha. Jayadev Goswami therefore sings Sadaya Hridaya Darshita Pasukatam. Simply to stop the killing of animals, Lord Buddha compassionately appeared. Some rascals put forward the theory that an animal has no soul or is something like dead stone. In this way they rationalize that there is no sin in animal killing. Actually, animals are not dead stone, but the killers of animals are stone-hearted. Consequently, no reason or philosophy appeals to them. They continue keeping slaughterhouses and killing animals in the forest. The conclusion is that one who does not care for the instructions of saintly persons like Narada and his disciplic succession surely falls into the category of Nasta Pragya and thus goes to hell. Mama Gyana Tamrandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Malitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gaurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Shtapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Shri Shri Rupam Sagarajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitamtam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitam Sja Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopeshi Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Vrindavanishvare Vrishabhanu Sutta Devi Punamami Hari Priye Pancha Kalpatruvyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyayavacha Patitanam Bhavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sadigor Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Yes, the Prabhupada speaks here about this idea that the animals have no soul. And the rationalization that there's no sin in animal killing. It shows how a person who's thinking like that, I mean, if you look at an animal, anyone with any intelligence can see that animals have so much life. You know, what is the difference between an animal and a human? So we can understand that someone who sees like that, who's someone who thinks that an animal has no soul, then you can understand how their heart is like stone. Stone-like heart, such a miserable existence, such a miserable mentality to have a heart which is so hard like stone that you're prepared to kill animals just for the sake of eating. And then Prabhupada describes that consequently no reason or philosophy appeals to them. So in a way this explains why some people don't take to Krishna consciousness. I remember when I first discovered Krishna consciousness, I got a Back to Godhead magazine, and one article in there was about vegetarianism, and I decided that I had to become a vegetarian after reading that article. I just couldn't live with myself and carry on eating meat, so I became a vegetarian. And I bumped into devotees in different places. And a very close friend of mine had also become a vegetarian. And I was very pleased because we'd both become vegetarians on the same day, although we hadn't told each other that we'd done that. And we only found out 6 months later. And because of that, I thought that my friend would be kind of interested in spiritual life. I mean, we were in a band and he was the guitarist, we were both guitarists. And we were a hippie band, so we were into kind of alternative, you know, sort of ideas. And I remember when I first joined the band, one of the first questions they asked me was, have you ever heard of a black hole? And I was like, yeah, I know all about black holes. And in those days, you know, somehow or another, I don't know why, the hippies were kind of really into this whole idea of the cosmos and black holes in space and that whole kind of cosmic thing. And because of the fact that I knew about black holes, I was 14 or 15 and they were all in their 20s. And because I knew about black holes, therefore I was kind of qualified to be a member of the band, you know, I was qualified to be in their kind of group. So they had this kind of esoteric idea. But I remember as soon as I started to tell my friend about Krishna consciousness and from what I'd learned from the books and from when I'd met devotees on the street and the discussions I'd had with them, when I started to, you know, tell him about reincarnation and how he explained so many things, my friend was looking at me, and as I was explaining to him, his face got more and more dull. And then after a little while, he said, "This is just complete nonsense." He said, "Once you die, it's finished. It's just black. It's dead. It's all over. There is nothing more." And then I started to retry to reason with him. But he became angry with me. And this was my friend. And I don't know why. I mean, what had I said to make him angry? But somehow or another, he just became completely angry with me. I was quite shocked. And immediately I thought, okay, I'm not going to carry on with this conversation. You know, there was some silence for some time. So, of course, well, it's amazing because he'd even become a vegetarian, you know. I don't know, I don't think it lasted very long, his vegetarianism. I had many friends who became vegetarians or were vegetarians at the time I knew them. And I know many of them didn't last very long as vegetarians. I think it was maybe just because it was part of the hippie thing. But later on, when they got mature or whatever, then they kind of abandoned that vegetarian idea. So we can understand this stone-heartedness is there. And when a person is stone-hearted, you can't reach them. They're not reachable. They have to go through a lot of purification. They have to have a lot of experiences. It's only when they go through experiences of loss or hardship or suffering that actually that can eventually possibly change their hearts. And you see that when you see people who maybe they've lost their family members and some death in the family, or they lose their livelihood or whatever, then people turn to God. So this lack of consciousness, this stone-heartedness, is actually, practically speaking, I don't know how many percent, a great percentage of the population of the planet has this hard-heartedness. And that's why we see that, for instance, here in India, you know, there's just a few oases of Krishna consciousness, but many people have no interest in Krishna consciousness. All over the world, just a handful of devotees that are attempting to take up the Krishna conscious life and attempting to spread Krishna consciousness. Krishna is described here that Krishna himself becomes very unhappy when he sees the people becoming so envious in their killing of animals, etc. And Krishna either appears himself or he sends his representatives. And he sends those representatives, he empowers them by their activities, by their life, to change the hearts and minds of people. So just the last few days, I've been, we're thinking of doing a drama for Janmashtami, and we were discussing what could we do, you know, and there's so many dramas that we do in ISKCON, and there's kind of lots of them that are kind of like, what would you say, we repeat them again and again, the same drama. So we were thinking it would be nice to do something a little different. So we were discussing what could we do. Some of the devotees were discussing, well, maybe if we do something, then it should be, should have a kind of a meaning. It should, you know, it should elicit some kind of reaction from the devotees. It should be something that they will appreciate. The purpose of drama, Srila Prabhupada, one of the purposes Srila Prabhupada had for us to do drama was that drama is a way that can touch the heart, even of non-devotees. Because if a drama is performed very nicely, and if the actors in the drama are actually able to surrender to the part, then it's described that they actually become the personality. If a person is playing Krishna in a drama, and he does it faithfully, and he does it trying to submerge himself into that part, then it's actually considered that Krishna has appeared in that drama. And sometimes we come across dramas that are really nicely presented, and the actors are so faithfully representing the person. I remember seeing a drama one time, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was being acted, and the devotee that did the presentation was so powerful and so good, you actually felt that you were hearing directly from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And it had that feeling, it gave one realizations. Prabhupada was, on that side, he encouraged us to do dramas, but also he was disappointed when we would do a drama and people would take it lightly. You know what it's like, you have a community of devotees and everyone knows each other very well, and some of those devotees, they go aside and they make a drama, and then they come on in costume, and you look at someone and you see through the costume, you say, hey, it's such and such, and then it's like, you know, it's a big laugh, there's you know, he's nothing like this, but now he's putting on a drama performance. So like that, there's a tendency to kind of take it lightly. But I remember reading one time how Prabhupada was observing a drama, and some devotees were laughing, and Prabhupada became very angry at some point. And he was saying, you shouldn't laugh. This is a serious. This is a serious drama. It's a serious message coming across here. It's not appropriate to laugh. If there is some funny thing, okay, yeah, you should laugh. But just to laugh, not take the drama serious, not try to enter into the message of the drama, then that's actually offensive. So like that, we should try to, you know, be serious when we're doing this kind of thing. So we were thinking, what could we do? So some of the devotees had been to Maharashtra recently, and they had become absorbed in the life of Tukaram. How many of you know who Tukaram is? Put your hands up if you've heard of Tukaram. Not many, yeah. I thought like that. So I was thinking, okay, Tukaram is somebody that not many devotees know about. It would be interesting to put a drama on about his life. So I started reading about the life of Tukaram. And actually, he was an amazing personality, amazing Vaishnava devotee, initiated by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he lived in Maharashtra, in Pandharpur. In Pandharpur, there's a famous deity there called Vitala, or Panduranga. And he stands like this. He's standing in a position, he has his hands on his waist, and he's waiting. I don't remember the pastime, but there's a pastime where some devotees were supposed to come to meet him. And he's waiting for them, and he's waiting for them. And you know what it's like if you're waiting. It's like, where are they? You know, you put your hands like here. It's a common, you know, human response, you know. Where are they? So Vitala is on this pose like this, waiting. So this devotee, Tukaram, he was born about 500 years ago near Pandharpur. And it's described that his parents were pure devotees, and they were praying for a special soul to appear, and they were blessed with the appearance of this devotee as their son. And actually, Tukaram is an incarnation of Prahlad Maharaj, so he's a very special personality. But as usual, Krishna, when he sends these people, he covers them so that they're not aware actually of their divinity. And actually, Krishna spoke to Tukaram I'm not sure if it was before he was born or just when he was born. He spoke to him saying that in the beginning of your life, you will have, it will be comfortable, it will be successful, but then at a certain point, things will become very difficult. And I want you to show by your example, showing a good example to all men, how one should act in this world. So, there are many pastimes. We're going to select some pastimes for this drama. But one pastime I was remembering. After some time, Tukaram becomes very well known for his beautiful songs. He composes these beautiful songs in praise of the Lord. And his fame becomes so great that Shivaji is like, I think at that time he was the prince, he was the son of the ruler of Maharashtra. He becomes aware, he hears about the glories of Tukaram. So Shivaji sends one wealthy businessman to the family of Tukaram. And Tukaram is not there at the time. And what's happened is Tukaram, in the very beginning, he inherits a very successful business from his father. And but then, I think at the age of 13, he starts to run the business of his father, Varnashram in action. And by the time he's 17, his parents both die. When he's 18, his older brother's wife dies, and his elder brother goes on pilgrimage. And by the time he's 19, he's completely despondent because his whole family is, practically speaking, gone, and he's left with the running of the business, and he just becomes despondent. And he decides himself to go off on pilgrimage, and as he goes off on pilgrimage, he has many wonderful experiences. So He returns back, he's married, he has children, and everywhere he tries to do business, it fails. It fails. It fails. Everything he does fails. Failure. Debts. Not just failure. He gets heavily into debt. His wife becomes completely despondent. You know, what have I married? You know, it's just these beads around the neck that were given to me at the marriage ceremony. It's the only thing that really makes me married to this fool, you know, who's just losing everything all the time. You know, and who is to blame? That black person. I hate that black person. He's always, you know, my husband is always singing his glories. And since he's been singing the glories of that black lord, everything in my life has gone down, down, down. So she's like that. But she has a God. And that God is her husband. Even though she's so angry with him, she serves him like anything. She's always just serving him. Her whole life is serving him. Even sometimes he goes off to the mountaintop to just chant the Lord's name, completely neglecting all his family responsibilities. She, somehow or another, manages to find him, takes him his lunch, serves him like that. So actually, she has this, she's following her dharma. She has this great love for her husband. But she doesn't have any appreciation for the Lord who's taken her husband away. So it's an interesting dynamic in his life, how this unfolds. So at one point, Shivaji has heard about Tukaram. So he sends a wealthy man to his family. And he's not there. Tukaram's not there. So the wife, she's thinking, oh my God, look at this man. He's obviously wealthy. He's probably come looking for some money that my husband owes him, you know. So the man comes in and he says, oh, is this the home of Tukaram? She says, no, you must have the wrong home. This is the wrong place. There's nobody here like by that name. And so she says, oh, but Shivaji, Prince Shivaji has sent me to give a gift to your husband. She goes, oh, yes, of course. No, of course, yes, this is, yeah, you've come to the right place. Please, come in. So this wealthy man comes in and he's got his assistant and they lay down some baskets on the floor. And there are so many beautiful clothes and jewels. And immediately the wife is there, the son and the daughter are there. And they're completely in bliss. And they're all started to pick up the jewels and put them on and put the clothes on. They're being dressed in rags because they've become so, they've been poor for so long. They have nothing. And all of a sudden they have all these princely clothes. So the mother is putting on all these jewels and the boy has got a sword and he's putting it on. He's got some fancy clothes. And like this, they're very happily putting the clothes on. Meanwhile, in the distance, Shivaji is watching. She doesn't know this, but Shivaji has actually come to observe what's going on. And he's there with a few men, and he's watching the scene. So they're putting on these clothes, and then Tukaram comes home. So Tukaram's coming, and Tukaram's always just very mellow, and smiling, and mild, and happy. And he sees his wife and children with these clothes on, and he smiles, and he's like, what is this? So then he preaches to his wife, come on, what are you doing? Why are you wearing these things? And he starts to take the jewels off, and the wife's going, oh, here we go, hubby's home. And she starts taking up, you know, she's throwing them on the ground, you know, this is my husband, typical. And the children, they're kind of detached, they take up the things and they're just dropping them on the ground, you know, kind of, it was fun while it lasted. And the husband is preaching to them, you know, why you're, you shouldn't be taking these things. You know, we're Vaishnavas, we're devotees. If we accept these things, we'll just become proud. We're not interested in this wealth and this opulence. You know, come on, don't you remember? We're devotees, you know. And so he convinces them to take all their things and put them back in the baskets. And they kind of, they're very dutiful. The wife, the son, the daughter, whatever the father says, they accept. Maybe not, they don't like it very much, but they'll accept it. So they put everything back. So meanwhile, Shivaji is watching. And he's amazed. You know, these people have been poor for so long. They get a free, unsolicited gift. And they're not accepting. So finally, Shivaji comes in. He approaches... what's his name? Tukaram. He approaches Tukaram and he says, it's true. I've heard so much about you. I've heard so much about your greatness. And I can see that it's true. You are truly a saint. You are truly a sadhu. He says, please accept me. You are my master. Please accept me as your disciple. And like this, he bows down to Kuram and surrenders to him. So this is like a very wonderful story. This is the princely ruler of Maharashtra state. Shivaji has become very famous as a great warrior. And yet he's surrendering to this bhakta after having given this test. So like that, Srila Prabhupada, when he was talking about developing Mayapur, some devotees came to me the other day asking about cottage industries, how can we develop cottage industries? And I was explaining to them how Prabhupada had wanted us to develop some cottage industries here in Mayapur. Simple things like making dhotis or saris. He was saying if the devotees here can make saris, then we can sell them around the world. All our centers will buy our saris from Mayapur. And devotees were going to come to Mayapur to learn how to make these diorama dolls. And so Prabhupada was saying, yes, they should come and do that. And he was saying that, yes, we can do these things, but we shouldn't be business-minded. For maintaining ourselves, we can do, but we shouldn't be business-minded. Another time, Prabhupada was discussing with some devotees, and I think it was with Jayatirtha, and or maybe it was Bhagavan. They were explaining how some devotees were getting a bit carried away with the development of business. And Prabhupada was saying, yes, this is the problem. In the material world, we're very business-minded. It's the tendency for us to be business-minded. But then when we become business-minded, we forget Krishna. We become so absorbed in making money and seeing the bank balance going up and dealing with the, you know, the import of the goods and the selling of the goods and the promoting of the goods. And the danger is that it all comes at the expense of our Krishna consciousness. So the life of Tukaram is a really good example of a person who, he had a very successful business, which was inherited, and he was running it very well. But then, at a certain point, somehow or another, because of the fact that he had this devotion in his heart, Krishna took everything away. And eventually, after this happened, he started to adopt a policy that whatever he would sell, he would always give a little bit extra, more than the rate. You know, if a kilo of atta is 5 rupees, then he'll sell a kilo and a bit more for 5 rupees. So like this, he became very popular among the people. People would go and buy things from him, and he would always give a little bit extra. But of course, his business did pretty badly, because he would end up losing, like that. But he didn't care, because his whole thing was that he was a bhakta, he was a devotee. His only interest was in chanting the Lord's name, just chanting the name, remembering the Lord. And this business was just there to make ends meet, just to fulfill the demands of the body. And in many cases, both he and the family had to suffer from hunger or different hardships. So, of course, he was an extreme example. It's not that everyone, you know, that we should all be kind of starving and hanging outside of the doors of our grihas, you know, almost dead from starvation. But it's a kind of a principle that that should be the kind of mentality. You know, rather than going the other way where we just kind of get into business and the whole thing is business, business, business. You know, Prabhupada would say, where is money? Where is money? Where is money? He said, like the hog, where is stool? Where is stool? Where is stool? You know, Prabhupada would say it repeated like that. So rather than getting kind of carried away in that end, we should get carried away in the other end, which is Krishna Bhajan. And we have to do some business, we have to do something to make ends meet, but it should just be for that, just to make ends meet. Not that we sacrifice our Krishna consciousness. So the whole purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement is Krishna consciousness, to become Krishna conscious, to remember Krishna, to become absorbed in his pastimes, to become enamored by his wonderful personality. And we can only do that if we meditate on him and serve the devotees and serve the spiritual masters and try to get their mercy. So that's the process, we know that. And yes, we have to make ends meet. So people like Tukaram are there to give a good example as to how one can do that, but how one's focus should be on the highest goal. how one's focus shouldn't be deviated from Krishna, shouldn't be deviated from Krishna's instruction, shouldn't be deviated from Krishna bhajan, like that. So this is the way that a stone heart, all of us have some affliction of the stone heart. If we didn't have some affliction of stone heartedness, then we would be feeling so much compassion. The reason why we don't feel compassion, I was reading the other day, I think it was in the same book actually, that it's explained that Tukaram, when he saw the suffering of any child, he would feel the same anguish as he felt when he saw his own child suffer. So when a person is like that, when a person feels just as much compassion for a complete stranger as he does for his own dearly beloved family, that person is a saint. So that is actually the level we have to come to, that we have to actually see everybody as deserving of mercy and as of being in need of Krishna's love. So if we don't have that, then to some degree there's some hard-heartedness there. It's that hard-heartedness which prevents us from seeing like that. It makes us see things in terms of family or nation like that. So if we have that, if we're not feeling that compassion, then we're going to understand that we need to work on that. That we have so much further to go before Krishna will be pleased with us. Krishna becomes pleased with those who sacrifice themselves to bring others to Him, who have no selfish desire, simply a desire to bring others to His lotus feet. If we can do that, if He sees that we have that motivation, then He becomes pleased with us and He sends us all help. If we have that selflessness, we don't have to make any other endeavor. Actually, we can't make any endeavor. It's not really a question of endeavor as such. It's just a question of changing desire. And when the correct desire is there, then Krishna just bestows. there are many stories in Tukaram's life where when Tukaram failed to provide for his family, Krishna would appear in a disguise and provide everything. We hear these stories, we have these stories, our own stories of Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami, the six Goswamis, different stories about how Krishna appears to protect them and help them in different ways. So just like this, Tukaram, same experience. Krishna would come personally in disguise and help him. And if you want to find out more, then you'd come to the drama. I'm not sure what day it's going to be. I think it's going to be before Janmashtami. And I hope it's going to be good. That we haven't even started yet, so you know, who knows. But with all your blessings, if you could bless us now, maybe we can come up with a good drama. So, okay, so I'm going to stop there. Has anyone got any questions or comments? Prabhuji.
Coming to the money aspect, we exactly don't know how much we need. So based on how much we have, we do different activities. Say maybe we contribute to the temple, we do home programs, right? Those are for spiritual. And for material also, we do a lot of other aspects. So how do we say the fine line, how much is sufficient for a person?
Well, it's something that comes from experience. It's like, it doesn't take anything to remember Krishna, just the will to do it. You know, whenever there's an opportunity to pick up a book, read something about Krishna, chant his names, tell others. So that we should be doing as much as possible, filling up our free time with that. And like that, Krishna becomes attracted. When he sees a person is doing that and has a desire and is enthusiastic to do that, then Krishna is attracted to that. And then, it's just like a kshatriya when he goes onto the battlefield. You know, he's got his sword, shiny, sharp sword, and he's surrounded by others with shiny, sharp swords. And they're all intent on sticking those swords in him. Yeah? And who knows where the blade will come from. around there are so many Kshatriya soldiers and they're all fighting, and who knows where that blade will come from. This, you can't make any plan. You just have to go on instinct. You just have to rely on the Lord. But I'm doing this, you know, if it's a whole, and we're talking about Kurukshetra, we're not talking about some mundane war. It's a holy war, you're doing this for Krishna. Krishna's ordered, it's your nature, fight. So you just go into that battle and you just fight and you just rely on Krishna to give you the inspiration to turn left, to turn right, what to do. So that's an extreme example. But so many Kshatriyas enter into battles like that and they give everything they can. They give their full power and they come out unharmed. So like that in life, it's nowhere near as dangerous. But we have to just rely on Krishna. And who knows what circumstance will come. And in the life of Tukaram, so many tests were given. And he could have failed those tests, but because he always remembered Krishna and always prayed to Krishna, and in the end when it seemed like there was no way out, when it seemed like he would fail the test, he would just throw up his arms and say, Krishna, you please do something. And then it always worked out okay because he surrendered to Krishna. So in our life, that's all we can do. Just surrender to Krishna and just whatever comes along, analyze it at that point and see what is the most Krishna conscious thing to do. So it's, we can make a general plan, but sometimes life throws things in which are, you know, unexpected, and then we just have to try to be Krishna conscious. We have to be like that. We have to have that fighting spirit, that being accepting that Krishna will protect. Like that, relying completely on Krishna's mercy, and then in that way getting the intelligence to carry on. Is that okay? Anything else?
If I am, what to do with your money?
It's on, I think. You just switch it off.
Yeah. Fine line. How much money? Okay. Bhakti Vichitapurna Swami Maharaj is the example that is the Vaishya, he has his money, and then he has his expenses. He has family maintenance, so that's all has to be covered. He has his different projects for the future. Holidays, whatever it is, he has his business expansion, he wants to expand, so he has money for everything, he puts, allocates money for all of his needs and all of his future. What's left in his pocket, that you give 25%, not you give 25% of your whole income, but just like what's left in your pocket as pocket money, that 25% you give in charity.
Thank you. It's a very good answer. Okay. No more. Oh, okay. There's a book in Gurukul called Tukaram. Yeah, we saw the video yesterday, actually. It's a good video. Although it's a little inaccurate. Some of the stories are a bit mixed up, I think, from the book I've been reading. But it's a really... Apparently, there's a this movie made long time ago, it's in Marathi, it's got English subtitles, and the person who plays the lead role of Tukaram, he's an actor, he was so impressed with the life of Tukaram that he took sannyas after he made that film. And apparently he didn't make any other films, as far as I know, but at least I know he took sannyas after making it. He was so, and you can see actually his acting in the movie, it's one of the nicest movies I've ever seen. You know, sometimes Hindi movies can be a bit kind of cheesy or whatever, but they say the Marathi people are a little bit more serious, and this movie is very serious and very nicely done, and he's a very his acting of Tukaram is very good. So if you can get to see that film, it's worth seeing. It's quite a long film, it's like 2.5 hours long or something like that. Well, there's a copy in Gurukul, so maybe you... Oh, it's available in the boundary wall. Okay, so you can get it there. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.